Welcome, O listener, to another episode of Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug. This is episode 115 of the podcast, and we have another great discussion lined up for you, which, again, I'm not part of. This week, we have, I believe, Draxaneth and Sir Klaus, and they cover a bunch of different topics. I actually regret not being in the episode because Sir Klaus said some unfortunate things about Dungeon Siege 3, which I would have happily rectified if I'd actually been in on the podcast. I realize maybe didn't get the best reviews, but it is actually a really great game. That said, they talk about the InXile / Obsidian Entertainment acquisition by Microsoft. They talk about a bunch of other things as well. Check the show notes for all the details. I'll try and make sure everything is included. And of course, give the episode a good listen and see for yourself what gets talked about. And of course, as always, I'll just remind you that we are now hosted on Anchor.fm. It's a newer social podcast hosting platform. You can find us at anchor.fm/SSSH podcast, or of course at our website, spamspamspamhumbug.com. But at Anchor, you can take advantage of some neat community features. You can leave voice messages up to a minute in duration. And you can give our episodes applause. And if you're listening in the Anchor app, you can also favorite our episodes and the podcast itself. If you do the smart home thing, you can find us live on the Apple HomePod. Try saying, "Hey Siri, play the podcast Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug," and see what happens. Likewise, Google Home, try saying, "Hey Google, play the podcast Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug." And as always, this episode of Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug is brought to you by our Patreon backers. Thank you to everyone who supports the podcast and the codex by that means. And as always, a hearty thank you to our co-producers, Seth, Golden Flame, Chris, Brickbat, Dominic, Violation, Cranberry, Shamano70K, Gradia, Christopher, Bruce, Edward, the Hearth of Britannia, Dark Wraith Dragon, Helgriff, Gronk, Pascal, and Thorwan. If you'd like to join that number, head on over to patreon.com/ultimacodex and take a look at your options. Well, that's all I had to say, so without any further ado, enjoy the show.
Do you want to talk about the Microsoft acquisition of the two independent studio, Obsidian and... how is it? And the second one? Or have you another preferred subject?
Well, I think we can talk about several subjects. I'm not very knowledgeable about those studios, so. But I only heard the news about the acquisition by Microsoft and how this could impact on the development.
The question. Both studios had difficulties with the treasury at one moment or the next, and I think Obsidian back in the day, must have been in the early 2010s, had an exclusive project with Microsoft, but it didn't get through, it was on the Microsoft side, and they decided to not go this way and stop the project, and created financial difficulties for Obsidian to the point where we were at the limit of closing, and the studio was saved by Kickstarter, and especially the Kickstarter for the first Pillars of Eternity game. Mm-hmm. And after that, they were able to release two more games, and here we are today, where we are bought out by Microsoft. The other studio, I'm just looking for the name so I don't butcher it. excuse me.
Mm-hmm. InXile.
Yeah, InXile was first. I think I'm not wrong. Created to release Wasteland 2. It was the first game they released, which is the sequel to Wasteland 1, yeah. Which is the spiritual ancestor of the Fallout series.
Mm. And InXile also is also the developer of the Torment Tides of Numenera.
Yes, and the Bastille 4, mm-hmm. just released.
Yeah, I remember the advertising for that game and the Kickstarter, yeah. But I wasn't really very convinced about Numenera at all.
I
was a alpha and beta tester for that, and I felt that Monte Cook just didn't have enough direction. He promised a lot of things, and what he did was nothing of what he promised. He was talking about a lot of things that he was promising, lots of things, and the rules, the game, everything was the completely opposite.
You're talking about
the
pen and paper game?
Yeah, and yeah. The Numenera.
Yes, I kickstarted the game too back in the day, but I hoped for something different, and I was not thrilled with of mechanisms of the game engine work, and I never played it much myself. I fell again for The Strange, which is another game using the same game engine, but again it was more for the setting concept of The Strange rather than the mechanism itself. Because on the pen and paper side, I'm a real fan of a game called Torg, which is a game that originally released in 1990, I think. Talks about multiple realities invading on Earth, and the fight from people to defeat the High Lords who are leading these invasions. And this Strange, with its multiple realities and ability to hope through, was something that I really wanted to see, because at the time when the Strange was kickstarted, Torg was still a game that was something like almost 30 years without new products. But since then, Torg has seen a second life with Torg Eternity, which was a new version of a game released by Ulysses Spiele in North America. I'm pretty happy with that, and I completely moved away from Numenera and the engine that models it. I was curious to see if the weird setting would translate well in a computer game, and I don't know. I played a couple of hours, but I didn't like it so much to the point I wanted to continue playing it. It's not my cup of tea. On the other hand, I played the Bard's Tale 4 recently, and I completely liked it. A friend of mine said that it's more like a Portal game with more RPG elements rather than a classic dungeon crawling RPG, and I must say I'm totally okay with that definition, because while you have enemies to defeat and a party to manage, you have a lot, and I mean a lot, of puzzles in that game. Yes, a physical puzzle, you know, pushing blocks to align in a specific formation, clockwork puzzle where you have to move gears. So some of them are moving, not others, and things like that. But it's an interesting game. I don't know for both games what is their current financial health situation. Maybe they're in need of fresh money, and the acquisition of Microsoft can help with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there always needs to be a balance between the budget, the creative freedom, and the, how should I call it, and the corporate.
Yeah. The thing is,
if any of them is, money is always going to be needed.
Yeah.
And the creative freedom needs to be kept in check to some point to keep things from drifting away. There needs to be a sort of stability and consistency. And also profitability.
Excuse me, I'm a bit hurt. But the thing is, both of these games had no personal money. It was two independent studios for which each game was kickstarted, and it was the kickstarted money that that would create the game. And somehow, how to say that? Somehow, it was an experience of always getting fresh money to go forward to a point where you can't ask yourself if they are not announcing a new game to get a new influx of cash to finish the previous project. And that's the question. I mean, if you have no other income of cash besides the Kickstarter, you can get over your head and promise something more and something that you cannot deliver at one moment. And it's exactly what happened in some kind of thing with Portalion and Shroud of the Avatar, if you will. So having a huge company like Microsoft or Electronic Arts or THQ North beside the studio can help both limit the feature creep on your game and keep the influx of cash. But by doing so, like you said, you trade your freedom of doing things. One of the things which is particularly clear for me with these games is that both InXile and Obsidian worked for Kickstarter, but offered a lot of physical goodies with some of the Kickstarter levels. And things like that, I think, won't happen anymore with Microsoft behind them. So we are back to a more standardized game, which will be released in the maybe in the store shelves, but with a standard edition, maybe a limited edition, but with limited content too, if you will. Collector products, which were high-level Kickstarter pledges, won't exist anymore for this game. And I wonder if this, for the kind of grognard crowd that what was attracted to Obsidian games and InXile games, maybe it was part of attractivity too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot that they can benefit a lot from that, but it's also a double-edged sword. It's always a trade-off.
Yeah.
Sacrifice something or something.
I think it's particularly the case with InXile. If I remember well, Brian Fargo, who was an 80s game designer like Richard Garriott, announced that after Bad State 4, he would leave the game industry and take his, how do you call that, its leave from it. And so InXile, without Brian Fargo, can certainly benefit from being a Microsoft studio. Now, a thing I'm less familiar with is about Microsoft history with role-playing games. I can't remember them having released a pure RPG game for the studio, but maybe I'm mistaken. I remember
Wasn't Gas Powered Games, wasn't it a Microsoft game studio?
Yes, it was both Microsoft.
Games was the developer of Dungeon Siege.
Yes, for Dungeon Siege, yes. I still have my my first edition of Dungeon Siege, which I was lucky to win in a raffle, I think, from Microsoft, with the original CD signed by the main developer of the game. But yes, it was Dungeon Siege, but it wasn't. It was an action RPG in the veins of a Diablo game, rather than a full-fledged RPG like Pillars of Eternity or Wasteland 2, a thing like that. Microsoft was also behind the late Asheron's Call MMO game. With Turbine was a studio of Microsoft back then. They used a Microsoft payments solution until they split and became an independent studio from Microsoft in the early 2000s. But I can't remember them. I don't know what was anything like Mass Effect or things like that, which was early on an Xbox 360 exclusive, was other studios from Electronic Arts. So no. So I'm curious to see what the strategy will be with that. Do they want to create a new RPG to be concurrent to Electronic Arts? Or do they want... because they could have acquired only one studio, let's say Obsidian, which is the most successful one, but they actually bought out two studios. I wonder what the strategy is behind that.
Maybe games for the Xbox, most likely.
Both studios can benefit, especially I think InXile already has experience with releasing on multiple platforms because Torment's Tides of Numenera, which is the Numenera games we discussed earlier, has been released not only on PC but also on Xbox and PS4. I'm not sure about Obsidian Studios. If they released anything I don't think they released anything on the consoles.
Not sure.
No, Pillars of Eternity, Tyranny, Fallout, New Vegas. Oh, Alpha Protocol. I never entered. Never entered 2. Star Wars: Knight of the Fallen. Oh, they released South Park, the South Park games. Oh, interesting. I didn't remember that, but in a twist of history, Dungeon Siege 3, which is, I think, one of the least liked games in the series, was released by Obsidian Studios. Back in the day, Obsidian Studios were mostly known for creating follow-up to major games like Dungeon Siege 3, Star Wars Knight of the Old Republic 2, I think, Neverwinter Nights 2, and Fallout New Vegas. And most of the games positively
received
by the critics back then, which motivated them to create a new franchise. As I said, at the turn of the decade, when we started the 2010s, Dungeon Siege 3 flopped, and I kind of remember that Obsidian Studio had financial difficulties because Microsoft moved away, backed away from an exclusive deal with them. So it's interesting to see that that they are returning to Microsoft now.
They say that life is a cycle.
Yeah. Which is old is new again.
Cycle starts again.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm just checking the Wikipedia page of Obsidian Studio, and you remember, didn't know that, but Obsidian and InXile were both former founded by former employees of Interplay Entertainment, and they used to share technology with each other. So it's interesting. Both. What I want to say about that is that both studios are known to have worked with each other. So is there a pattern there? Maybe they want to acquire the two studios, and once they release the next game, each studio will release the next game in its waited for. Maybe fusion the studios.
Yeah, maybe the only games I played from Interplay that I remember, Baldur's Gate 2.
Yeah, but Interplay was
Battle Chess.
Oh, Battle Chess was a very good game.
Yeah, and Earthworm Jim. Earthworm Jim.
Oh, they. It was Brian Fargo who was the founder of Interplay, which went to create InXile later on. But it was Bardstale, Wasteland. The studios back then had a deal with Electronic Arts to get the distribution done. Oh, I'm curious.
Yes. I remember I wanted the Icewind Dale games, but I never got them.
I found, just looking at.
I also played something. Siberia. Yeah. That was from Interplay.
Decent free. Oh, yes, I kind of remember that. They released Dungeon Master 2, Legend of Skullkeep, back then. And most of the games like Star Trek 25th Anniversary, which was an amateur game.
I remember I wanted the Bard's Tale game too.
Yeah. The first game I played for me to play was Bard's Tale 3, Thief of Fate, back in the day, with a rotating. A small piece of card. You have
the game.
But it's an interesting story. I don't know where we are going there. I'm a bit curious because both of them have a game to be released or just being released. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Obsidian has just released the Pathfinder role-playing game video game, and InXile is producing Wasteland 3 for 2019. So I'm curious whether going in post 2019 and post 2019, will we see some announcements from Microsoft? Maybe.
So they finally released Kingmaker.
Yes.
I was not aware of it.
Did you play the game?
I played the tabletop game.
Yeah, I have some products from Pathfinder, the pen and paper role playing game, but since I after Dungeon Mastering a lot of D&D 3rd edition, which I include 3.0 and 3.5. And its derivative game, which was the Star Wars D20 RPG. I was a bit burned out on the game engine. So I never liked much the Pathfinder mechanisms. So it wasn't too much of an interest for me on the paper, but maybe as a game, maybe it's better for me. I have to check it out. But I don't know.
More simplified and more polished than the third edition or 3.0 or revised edition.
As a game master, I always felt that for the players, it is an excellent game engine. But as a GM, it was I had too much thing to check, especially in combat. It was becoming a slog. And I'm curious because I saw a video of a combat between the party and a group of ogres in a Kingmaker video game. Mm-hmm. And I think the combat was something like 45 minutes long. And I'm wondering if it's that's really the case, or if the person playing the game was just messing with us. But damn, it's just too much. 45 minutes. Can you imagine that?
So much. It feels like the tabletop game, but
yes.
Tabletop, it's the game master that is processing the numbers and everything.
Yes, and the players thinking about what we're doing, but that was just the game. Because there's so many things that players can do, and they are moving at the exact same distance, and they're using the noxious cloud and things like that. I don't know. I think that 10 minutes of combat is already long, and especially if you lose during the combat, you have to reload and restart. So I don't know.
As a tabletop, I liked it. Even I liked a special module called Mythic Adventures.
Yes, I'm aware of that one.
Mythic Adventures, that's, back then in third edition, there were the epic levels.
Yes.
Which were levels above the 20th. But that made things very complicated. It's a very high level, and you keep growing and growing and growing. But
especially opposition.
And on the with the Pathfinder Mythic Adventures, that's the mythic powers, the mythic tiers is something separate from the rest of the character, and you can turn it on or turn it off whenever you want to as a game master. So for example, you say there's a god that grants his favor to you and makes you more powerful, and then all of a sudden they have all those mythic powers, and when they do whatever that deity wanted them to do, you just take their powers away and they return back to the way they were before that. Maybe a few levels higher, but they're still mortals. They don't have those mythical powers that allow them to fight gods and extremely powerful creatures.
Which is interesting because you start at level 1 with mythic powers, and you can start having a mythic adventure from the get-go. You don't have to wait until level 20 when numbers are starting to be unmanageable. But mythic adventure was an interesting concept. They tried to move away from the difficulty of epic level in 4th edition D&D. Which is a whole different beast, by incorporating the levels 20 to 30 in the game. So you add your heroic levels from level 1 to 10, your paragon levels from 11 to 20, and 21 to 30 was epic level. And both in Paragon and on epic levels. You selected a Paragon path and an epic destiny, which respectively allowed you newer powers, especially the epic destiny. And it was expected. I mean, when your character reached level 20 to 30, it was on its way to becoming something different. Maybe you were becoming an angel for your god. Maybe you were becoming a legend that will live forever in your world. Maybe you were becoming a powerful deity yourself. It was really something that was just different. But D&D 4, well, like someone said, it was the best game for what it wanted to be. It is a game with very tactical combats, but it wasn't well received, so they moved away from all that when they released D&D 5th edition and returned to, I wouldn't say to its roots as 3rd edition. It's even simpler than 3rd edition with D&D 5. And all the things about epic level have completely disappeared from the game itself. But epic level isn't something new. It existed in another form in AD&D 2nd edition with on the tail end of the life of the game of AD&D. They released a new version of the books. And they released Player's Options, a series of books called Player's Options. And one of them was high-level campaigns. It's from this book that the epic level from 3rd edition and later on in Pathfinder existed. I mean, as a fighter, when you started to be level 21-something, your punches started to be magical. You became able to punch things that were resistant to natural damage, things like that. Mm-hmm. But I think that other games materialize the mythic aspect of the players too. But like you said, what was interesting with mythic campaigns is that it was a separate template from your character, and that's something very interesting, because other games will put you in the skin of a godchild or things like that, in which you are the spawn of a greater god like Thor or Odin or Zeus or Athena, and you have powers from your god. From your godfather or mother. But this is different. Maybe we'll do a game one day.
Mm-hmm. There are lots of things that everyone has tried to handle different. And for example, I remember along with the Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder, and there were other systems based on it. There was one that I played with my friends. It was Iron Heroes.
Yes, a derivative of... yes, it was a derivative from the D20 system. It was... In the 2000s, we had a lot of opportunities to create new games when the D20 SRD game was released, game document was released. And Monty Cook
that was interesting.
Yes, Monty Cook created a series of games. One of them was
Arcana
and Unchained, I think. And the other was Iron Heroes. I never played it, but
really
I found
good. But the Numenera was really his worst the worst he made.
It's very different. Monty Cook.
Yeah, Arcana Evolved and Iron Heroes were good.
Yeah, Arcana Evolved, which was the sequel to the first Arcana game. I can't remember the name right now.
Arcana Unearthed.
Yeah, I know. Both games were Monty Cook was a developer for Wizard of the Coast back then, and he had a good handle on the D20 system to the point in which he released a series of very successful products like the Book of and something which created new rules for the third edition of D&D. He released a huge setting adventure, which was called Ptolos, the Spire City, I think it was the subtitle, which was the first mega book I knew about. It was, I think, something like 700 pages. And he created a setting, but I don't think he created much for the setting beyond the core books, which was Arcana Unearthed and Arcana Evolved, which was the Dragon Empire. And then he created the Iron Heroes.
The Diamond Empire,
yes, that's right. Which was interesting and different setting. And the Iron Heroes. I think I remember the concept of Iron Heroes as being more geared toward martial classes and less toward...
There's a quote which describes the game and the concept. It says, "You are not your magic weapon and armor. You're not your spell buffs. You're not how much gold you have or how many times you have been raised from the dead. When a big bad demon snaps your sword in two, you do not cry because that was your holy avenger. You leap onto its back, climb up to its head, and punch it in the eye. Then get a new damn sword up to the next humanoid you have left dead."
It's very interesting because I'm checking the page right now, and I wasn't aware of it, but Iron Heroes wasn't developed by Monty Cook. It was published by Monty Cook. And the game was released by, was written by Mike Merles. And I don't know if you know about him, but he's been a lead designer for 4th edition and 5th edition of Dungeons & Dragons back then. Interesting. But yes, it was a very different...
It's more like, as a friend said, it's like a Hellenic version of the game. Like the stories from Odysseus, like the Battle of Troy, the Battle of Thermopylae, and all those Greek battles.
More like some RPG, like which was it called? I trying to do recently. Excuse me. To have a more down-to-earth representation of combat rather than flourishes and things like that.
Not exactly more down-to-earth, but more...
Less mystical, unless it's not calling for your father's spirit to help you lift your sword, like would a mystical barbarian in Dungeons & Dragons, which was by the strength of your own abilities that you succeeded, not some mystical mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. So.
Interesting. I'm just curious.
There was some from the games that I have played. I don't know if you have tried Mutants and Masterminds.
It was the super rare game that evolved from the D20 SRD. I don't know. I usually have difficulties playing superhero games.
That role set is not necessarily for superheroes. It's more like a general purpose. And what I like about that game is that it leaves a lot of details very vague. So what it details is the effects of your powers or your equipment or everything. You just define the effects. For example, you have this ability one, which does damage, and this damage is fire damage. Or you have this power, this damage power, and it's just this type of damage of this intensity, and it's an array which you can switch between fire, ice, lightning, wind, and you spend one turn, one action switching between what kind of power you're going to use. So if you want to switch from fire to ice, you spend one turn switching, and then for example, you have an effect which is an affliction which maybe slows them down or numbs their mind or something. They're just effects, and you just take that and define and create your own abilities, your own spells, your own magic, whatever. You just choose the effects you want your character to be able to do, and then you add whatever description you like. There's even a book dedicated to it. Gives you a list of different powers, like fire powers, time powers, maybe earth powers, magnetic powers, and everything. And for example, time powers. If you check the list of time powers, it says defensive time powers. It's a time defacement on which you go out of phase from time. And so when someone, for example, when someone shoots at you with a gun, you are, because you are out of sync with time, the bullet goes through at a moment in time when you're not there, but you are there. And or you go out of sync or out of phase with time and go through a wall, or you increase your speed faster, or to attack, to hit harder, or you use the time powers to heal wounds. And so you're using all different effects, and the book helps you to give them that description you want. So justify to say, my hero has the power to manipulate time, and I can heal because healing works by manipulating time this way. I have defensive power because I manipulate time this way to protect or to defend myself. And I manipulate time this way to attack. It has for all kinds of powers.
It's interesting. I'm just checking the website of Mutant and Masterminds. They have released a free edition of the game, with latest being the third edition. I don't know which is. Did it change much between the editions? Are you mostly playing with the original one?
I can tell you that the third edition, the game system needs a lot of polishing yet. There are lots of things that become mostly useless with the change in editions, because they modified them There are lots of things that become redundant, and things that if you raise, for example, the base ability scores, they're mostly useless. It's always cheaper to just buy what the points on the skills or the defensive points that you want to use specifically. Because if you raise the ability scores, they cost too much.
Okay, yeah.
It's not efficient. And there are other rough edges in the design of the character creation and also the character advancement. But the base idea is quite good.
Just looking at... a starter, a quick start. I'm gonna check that after the show.
Yeah, the book that gives you ideas for powers, for the description, or to justify using some to give your, if your character has powers under a specific theme or a specific element or something. It gives you the ideas.
Okay.
It's called Power Profiles.
Okay. And it's for the first or the second edition of the game?
For the latest edition.
Okay. Third edition, I think. Okay.
Yes, it's for checking from the index. There's air powers, armor powers, that is, powers that come from the armor you're wearing.
Okay.
Animal powers, cold power, cosmic powers, darkness powers, death powers, dimension powers, dream powers, earth powers, electrical powers, element powers, fire powers, gravity powers, illusion powers, kinetic powers, life powers, light powers, luck powers, magic powers, magnetic powers, martial powers, mental powers, meta powers, morphing powers, plant powers, radiation powers, sensory powers, size powers, tongue powers, speed powers, strength powers, summoning powers, talent powers, tech powers, teleport powers, time powers, water powers, weather powers. That's it.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of classification, so you can really select what you want to do if you are your character and which different you want to go.
Yeah, basically they give you how to give your powers a description based on a chosen power theme or power origin.
It's interesting because I don't think we had a lot of superhero role-playing games as video games. I kind of remember what was it called? I'm just missing the name right now. It was a Freedom Force series game, Freedom Force 1 and Freedom Force 2 against the Reich, I think it was the second game. There was, what was it called? Just give me a second. There was a game in 1994, which was called Superhero League of Hoboken, which let you play superhero in an RPG-like game. And it was a DOS game. Like I said, there was the Freedom Force series of game. But even that, Freedom Force was in what, 2002? So it's not... there was a... It was, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Damn. There was Noctopolis. Are you familiar with this game?
No.
Noctopolis was an adventure game in which you played a fan of imagine a superhero like Batman, and you were reading the comics, and then suddenly you are projected in Gotham City, and Batman had disappeared, and it's you to take up the mantle and find what happened. Noctopolis was that. It was a point-and-click game, which set you in the skin of this person, and you discovered what happened to your hero. Superhero League of Hoboken was a role-playing game released the same year as Noctopolis in 1994, but it was a funnier game. It was about superhero and comedy more than a serious game, and in which you created your superhero group, like in Bat's Tale or Might and Magic and things like that, and had to solve adventures. And of course, there's Freedom Force, which was I don't know if you're familiar with. It was a tactical role playing game in which you had to select a group of heroes who use the given heroes in some missions and vanquish enemies. It was released in 2002, and it had a sequel, I think, next year. It was in 2005, Freedom Force versus the Third Reich. It was very interesting, and I think both Freedom Force games are available in Steam and maybe in GOG. But superhero games are not something like we see very much as computer games, maybe because of what you said. With the freedom to create the character with its power set, it's very difficult to create a challenge that would be equivalent for every type of players, if you will. I mean, if you have an airbus challenge, and your character is a speedster, or just a strong and tough, or just a good fighter, he won't be able to overcome it, because he doesn't have the ability to do so.
Well, one of the experiments I did with that, the Mutants and Masterminds rule set was, and I watched an anime called Myriad Colors Phantom World, which was, the premise for that anime was quite good and interesting. It was about a world about a sort of event that caused some sort of mutation or something in the human mind. And this the humans started seeing spirits and ghosts and other kind of creatures that were previously something invisible to the eye. And it's not very clear the origin of these creatures, but it seems like they are actually created by human thought.
Oh, interesting.
And the characters acquire powers. They have powers based on their beliefs and their way of thinking. And the main characters, one of them is an artist. He draws things, and from his drawings come to life and become spirits he controls. There's another who eats anything. It's a girl who eats ghosts. She eats spirits, and so they awaken them, and then she eats them. And there's another who likes music, and she sings, and her voice is her sonic power. And there's another who trained martial arts. The martial arts she trained had something to do with the element, and so she draws power, elemental power, from her body, and uses it as martial arts technique. And other, there are other support characters with different powers. And from that anime, I created a quite simple setting about with the similar premise. And we played for several months on that. With the Mutants and Masterminds rule set. It was quite interesting. And there, the characters, even with that book, Power Profiles, there were a couple characters which started weak and without much direction, and that book helped the players to refine the powers on their characters and make them more useful.
That's good, because it means that you can make the game evolve, that you, and you are not stuck with a bad decision that you made a long time ago, which is classical of some role-playing, in which you decide one thing and doesn't work like you expected to, and you are stuck with that character unless you create a new one. On a very different note, have you seen the latest news that Stanley has passed away?
Yes, sad news.
It was a sad news. It was 95 years. We can say it's a lifelong. He lived a long life, but I was starting to think he was not going to pass away, because he was so energetic and he was seen in all Marvel media. Was so happy to participate.
Yeah, I was not aware of his age.
Yeah, he was very, very old. I started to be aware of his age a couple of years ago, I think, when he started to have difficulties with people who wanted to manipulate him for getting money out of him. Scammers and things like that. It was a really sad sad news to see. He brought us so much in the aspect of the renewing the comic industry in the 60s. And of course, it created some of the most well-known superheroes we are experiencing now. So let's hope that, and I'm pretty sure that while he wasn't there anymore at the helm of Marvel Studios since what, the late 70s, I think, what he brought us as a creator really inspired, we continue to inspire new generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always inspiring, and the comic books and writing about a character that the readers can relate to or that readers can admire, sometimes strive to be like a sort, like a specific character. And well, I don't know if you have been following on the what I have been writing lately.
I've been mostly disconnected from the Discord, so I don't know if you did you publish some new content.
Yes, I've been publishing and posting on Facebook, Twitter, and on the Discord fan project.
For your personal project, I think you which is record of the. Of Dragon Goddesses, that's right.
Yes, I've been posting what is an interview, which has the purpose to introduce the readers to the world of the game, and also I'm also aiming for something more. I want to see if how much interest it generates, and see if it can be more than a couple of games. Maybe something more like a comic or TV series or even a movie. I've been told by several people that it has enough quality and potential to become that.
You created a.
I have received a lot of positive feedback on it.
It's on the Facebook page, Record of Dragon Goddess, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm checking the link today.
Put a link here. I'm putting a link on the linkage channel. You can give it a quick read. It's not too long. It's been only four chapters, and they are short.
Okay, I'll do that later today because it's already. I don't know which time it is for you, but it's 6 a.m. for me. So
11 p.m.
Check that later on. Okay, the four chapters.
Yeah. Well, I have created a whole world and characters and I've tried to make the gods as characters.
I think you did a reading from other chapters back then in another episode of Spam Humbug, if my memory is correct.
That was a very short part.
Yeah.
But it's not part of the interview that I'm publishing right now.
Okay.
It's different. This one is more of an interview. It's like I have a lot of I have designed the that world and that universe, but there are lots of things that I haven't written down. So what I started doing was put it into writing, typing them, and put it as a sort of interview, role-played interview, where I get in character and try to feel like the interviewer and as the goddess being interviewed, and I play both parts. Feel and to be like the character at the moment, and I'm writing it down, typing it down. And the interview is flowing naturally. It's the questions that I feel like asking as the interviewer, and I'm replying to them as the goddess.
Okay.
And the flow, and I flow as I feel like I should flow.
I read that on my pause after midday. Sadly, it's almost 6:15, and I have to prepare for the day. Thank you for the discussion again today. I hope that with the spirit can do something with it. I hope to talk to you later on.
Sure.
Thank you. Goodbye and good night.
Good night.
If you want to participate more directly in the podcast, you can send us an email at ultimacodex@gmail.com, or if you're feeling a bit braver, you can leave us a voice message in one of three places: the podcast website, our Facebook page, or on anchor.fm. You're also welcome to join us on Discord to chat with us and to lurk or contribute to podcast recordings when they happen. If you want to join the Ultimate Dragons, you can do so at udic.org, where you can choose your very own dragon name. You can also find the Ultimate Dragons on Facebook and on Google+. You can follow at Ultimate Dragons on Twitter, or join them on Slack or Discord. And if you're feeling really old school, you can even fire up a Telnet client and check out the Wearmount. If you'd like to support Spam 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 Humbug, you can do so at Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to episodes the day before they go live for everyone else. You'll also get access to behind-the-scenes audio on occasion, and possibly other interesting content. But if a monthly subscription isn't your thing, you can always buy your video games at GOG. We are a partner of that fine site, and every time you buy one or more games at GOG via the links on our websites or in the show notes, that helps us out. But we also welcome your moral support. You can like the Ultima series on Facebook, follow at Ultima Codex on Twitter, or leave the podcast a review on iTunes. And you're welcome to share our episodes with your friends and social media circles. Spam, 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 Humbug is a production of the Ultima Codex. You can find show notes online at spamspamspamhumbug.com. Thank you for listening, and until next time, be virtuous.